Blog Talk Radio.
Chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road. How long you gonna stay here, Joe? Some people say this town don't look good in snow. You don't care, I know. Ventura Highway.
Gene, I can't hear you. Are you on mute?
Oh, thank God I was on mute. Well, welcome everyone to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters and a Twisted Mister or Two. Wow, I just thought I'd put a whole spiel out there for my grandson. Saying I hope everybody washes their face, washes their hands. That's terrible. Anyway, I hope everybody's having a good Tuesday. Well, mine's up in the air whether I am or not. Say, how are you, Pam?
I am doing pretty good, actually. I'm glad you were on mute because, honest, it would have been worse if all of a sudden we had technical problems that early in the show. So,
I was really giving it to him, too, because he was dragging his feet.
And as always, I'm looking forward to tonight's poetry and hanging out with you and other cool poets. And, you know, it's just a nice time.
Absolutely. So just so you know, I picked up Laurent. Hello, Laurent.
Bonsoir,
hi, Laurent.
Bonsoir, madame. How are you?
Glad you could join us.
Wouldn't be anywhere else.
But she says that to all the girls.
To all the Twisted Sisters.
That's right.
You suspicious person.
I wasn't suspicious. That was not a suspicion. That was a fact. I would bet that. See? Wow. So temperamental. Anyway, Pam, tell us about your prompt for tonight.
All right. Well, the prompt for tonight was quotes from Carolyn Wells. And Carolyn Wells was actually quite an interesting lady. She was born in the 1890s in New Jersey, she was born on June 18th, which actually makes her a Gemini like me and my daughter. Instantly to me that must mean she's pretty crazy and out there. But she's best well known for her fun, lighthearted poems such as limericks and parodies. But she also wrote quite a few mystery novels. She actually, in her career, she wrote a total of 170 books, ranging anywhere from children's poetry to adult poetry to mystery and murder novels. She did not go to college, but she was a very avid reader. In fact, even in grade school and high school, a lot of her education was filled in simply her reading. And she spent quite a few years before even starting writing being a librarian. So I found her to be.
Did any of her writing survive to this day other than poetry?
Oh, absolutely. If you Google Carolyn Wells Mysteries, you will find her books. You could actually probably go to a library and get one of her books. And you might even run across one that looks familiar. I don't know about that. I do know that she has, some of her poems are familiar ones. Like, I don't know if either of you two ever remember that tongue twister about Betty putting the bitter butter in her batter.
Yes.
She actually wrote that.
Oh, wow. Wow. That was a doozy, if I remember correctly. A real humdinger.
Yes. Yes.
Interesting. Very interesting. Good kid. Well, I understand. It's all yours, Pam. Whatever you want to do, whatever way you want to go with this.
All right. Well, let me go ahead and grab the first poem. I thought I had it, but then I remembered I grabbed the show link, so let me try this again. All right. And, of course, since we're fortunate enough to have prompts from a poet, we will be starting out with a classic poem, A Bicycle Built for Two by Carolyn Wells. And, Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Be happy to. A Bicycle Built for Two by Carolyn Wells. It was an ambitious young eel who determined to ride on a wheel, but try as he might, he couldn't ride right, in spite of his ardor and zeal. If he sat on the saddle to ride, his tail only pedaled one side, and I'm sure you'll admit that an eel couldn't sit on a bicycle saddle astride. Or if he hung over the top, he could go, but he never could stop. For his course, it is clear, he had no way to steer, and under the wheel he would flop. His neighbor, observing the fun, said, I think that the thing can be done. If you listen to me, you'll quickly agree that two heads are better than one. And this is my project, old chap. Around our two waists I will wrap this beautiful belt of bottle green felt and fasten it firm with a strap. To was done with a dignified mien, the two squirmed up on the machine and rode gaily away, or at least so they say, who witnessed the wonderful scene. And thought.
Absolutely wonderful, Florence. I have to say, you know, there was quite a few of her poems I really enjoyed, but I thought this one particularly was a fine example of her sense of humor and her ability to write limerick chains. I really did enjoy this, and particularly where it says, for of course it is clear he had no way to steer, and under the wheels would flop. And then, of course, yeah, the ending, too, where it says, or at least so they say who witnessed this wonderful scene. And that's the common thing in her poetry, is to have situations involving, you know, animals or, you know, that you just know would not happen. And part of the goofiness of it is really what makes it enchanting to me. And Phil, I know you very much enjoy limericks. What did you think of this write?
I enjoyed it very much. I thought it was funny. I like the one, where is it? If he hung over the top, he could go, but he never could stop. For of course it is clear he had no way to steer, and under the wheel he would flop. I mean, I just thought that, like, they were all funny in their own. But when I heard that part of it, I started to chuckle. Yeah, it's funny stuff. Very well done. I'm sure she doesn't need my approval, but definitely great job. I liked it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well said there. And, Lauren, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts on this classic poem?
This is the kind of delightfully plausible nonsense that exists for years and years and years and years. Other poetry, deeper, more profound, blah, 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 comes and it goes. This stands out. It's the type of thing that makes you want to rush to the typewriter, rush to your computer, rather, and immediately try it yourself because it looks like such fun. But, of course, when you make the attempt, rarely does one come up with something as good as this. Absolutely outstanding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. And you're right. They are the kind that stick in the hearts and the mind of people throughout the years. And, Gene, do we have anybody else on the line?
Yes, we do. We have Thomas on the line. Hello, Thomas B. How are you?
I don't know how you know it's me. You must be magic.
Oh, absolutely.
The last line of it.
Glad to have you here.
Absolutely.
I'm always glad to be here.
Wonderful. All right. And we'll go ahead and put the next one up. And up next is Louder Than Words by Isabella G. And, Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
No, I will give it a whirl. Okay, Louder Than Words by Isabella G. You told me that you loved me, wanted me more than anything in the world. I didn't believe you. You showed me that you cared, that you wanted to stay forever and a day. I didn't believe you. Months later, you decided to tell me everything you did and showed were lies. I believed you. It wasn't your words that stung the most. It was your actions that lied louder than your words. And the poem.
Great read there, Jean, and a wonderful write by Isabella, who wrote to the prompt, actions lied louder than words. And Tom, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, it definitely gets its point across in a very sharp and incisive way. The the thing that I find most humorous in this, because there is a wry humor in it, is that as long as she was handing out or he was handing out positive, they were one to a bit of the extreme. She didn't believe him, but the minute he admitted that he may have been promising more than he could deliver, or definitely been promising more than he could deliver, she believed him. I find that just as funny as the last line.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There definitely was a bit of a sting in those last lines. And it's interesting to me how right away she didn't believe him. And yet it seems as if the relationship continued, but, you know, that's not too uncommon. And Lauren, your thoughts?
Yes, ma'am. It's a quality brevity, and it's a very skillful melding of the prompt into the poem, told with a certain sense of, I don't know, matter-of-factness and regret. But not too deep regret, just laying it out there. Very enjoyable.
Yeah. You know, I like how you mentioned that it has that matter-of-fact, laying it out there tone, because the thing is, there's no words particularly used for emotions. Like, she doesn't say things like, that made me, you know, sad, or, you know, I cried. She does say it wasn't yours that stung the most, it was your action. So there's a little bit there, but for the most part, as you said, it's a lot of about just laying it out there, matter of fact, and kind of, and that's one of the things I like about it, it seems to let the reader decide how they want to emotionally react to the poem.
Yeah.
So, very well said. And, Jean, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yes, sir. I think that it was a very well done piece, and I also believe that it was a great take on that chosen prompt, because she basically repeated that quote right in that last line, and I think she pulled it together well, you know. And, you know, as everybody said, you know, everybody said pretty much the rest of what can be said. You know, in the beginning, she just didn't believe him. She didn't believe him. Everything was too good to be true. You know, then when he showed his true colors, she believed him. You know, because his actions did speak loud. So, well done.
Yeah, so very true. Mm-hmm. Great comment. All right. And up next we have Chips Breaded by Blue Harrison. And it goes like this. You have raged across my scenery with quiet steps, palming folds of my silky wrists. What gifts unravel ferociously, lips nip, bite, and ever tasting the curve and silken mold of me, untender and emotive, inaccurate to my offerings of untold thirst. You put a taste in glass and uncork the bottle to fill my barren want, whisper of vulgar sentiments, and spread yourself as for my buffet, because I could never thrive on candlelit, calm, centered plate. I respond to glass thrown upon hearth, and my upheaval of walls set for my passion is gypsy threaded, and all the stars nod, storm strongly projected, end poem. And she wrote the quote, a living gale is better than a dead calm. And Lawrence, your thoughts on Blue's poem?
Yes, ma'am. This is indeed a living gale. You know, I respond to glass thrown upon hearth, and the upheaval of walls set for my passion is gypsy-threaded. The two words gypsy-threaded calls to mind someone who travels from place to place to place, repeating a certain behavior, if it offers itself. Whisper vulgar sentiments and spread yourself as for my buffet. It's deliberately slightly dramatic, even though it doesn't need to be, but that sets the easy, as far as I'm concerned. So it works very well. Much enjoyed.
Yeah, I have to agree. It definitely does work very well. And great comment there. And Tom, your thoughts?
Oh, she definitely starts with a roaring wind. You have raged across my scenery with quiet steps, humming folds of my silky wisps, but gifts unraveled ferociously. And it just keeps building on that. That, you know, the fierceness, the readiness to be passionate with no regard for the niceties. So that when you get to whisper vulgar sentiments and spread yourself as from my buffet, it's already clear that this is one where they tease, taunt, and constantly stir each other into madness and rage. It's done really, really well because there's at the same time sort of a subtlety to what she's saying, almost as if to taunt not only the person who she's speaking to, but also to taunt those who are reading this, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. I have to agree. I particularly like the way how she went sensual with this, because when I put up the quote and I looked at it, you know, I didn't think about going sensual with it. It seemed to me like the whole idea of holding in, or, you know, letting out your opinion, letting out your voice. Like, my thoughts were aiming it more towards anger or towards just speaking up in general, or even that that tension that comes with somebody not talking to you. But I like how she built this up into something beautiful and sensual, and I really like her imagery in untender and emotive and accurate to my offering of a hooked thirst. That whole stanza there is just probably like my favorite, and also the gypsy threaded one. I like how this is about a woman who is extremely passionate and a man who brings out that passion in her and knows that she isn't a passive woman. So really excellent write and very well done. And Dean, your thoughts?
I think that this was well done. I think that the thoughts were very well expressed in this piece. You know, and it's showing that, you know, no, I can't just thrive in a world of calm and you know, all that. I need to have that element of passion in life in general. You know, it has to be, I don't know if wild's the word, but, you know, you have to give me I don't want to say rocky roads either. It's like, I just don't want it to be mundane and easy and simple.
Exactly. Yeah, like some entertainment.
Kinda. Yeah, exactly. Put a little kick in it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You got it, Thomas. No, I think that you know, that's basically it, and I think that she expressed it well, and it was a nice. I said it was a fabulous take on that chosen prompt, and that's why I feel about it. It was well done. Thanks,
absolutely.
Lou.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said there. All right. And great comments, everybody. And up next, we have Vagrant Hands by Duncan Ross Bell. And Tom, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. Give me a second here. Here we go. Vagrant Hands by Duncan Ross Bell. In a breath of brittle air comes the dead man's care. Smoky spittle, rot-laced bellow, wisdom bad, oft-stained yellow. It takes a lifetime to come of age. It takes a lifetime to live. It takes a lifetime to love. It takes a lifetime to fail, succeed, with every sunrise. Be blind to force your focus. Sit down to make your stand. Be open to the progress. Walk out on the demand. Punctured for the pulse. Praying for the stand. Time becomes an action, a thought from vagrant hands. End poem.
Great read there, Tom. I will admit, I don't know where the quotes, the lines that he quoted came from. If anybody knows when it's their turn to comment, please feel free to enlighten me. Otherwise, I guess Google could enlighten me. Lawrence, let's start with you and your thoughts.
I think his prompt was prompt one.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't remember it.
Yeah, happiness is something to do with happiness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have to be able to recognize happiness.
Is the ability to recognize it. But no, what I noticed is, actually what I was talking about was his poem and how he has that one stanza completely in quotation marks. And so I figured it must not be, he must have put it in quotation marks because the lines come from somebody else. And I was just curious if anybody knew.
In that first stanza, in a breath of brittle air comes the dead man's care, smoky spittle, rot-laced bellow, wisdom's badge, oft-stained yellow. And then, as you mentioned, we have the quotes, and I think the quotes are from the old man, who was described as a dead man, wisdom's badge. Well, if he has wisdom, the quotes are all quotes of wisdom, it seems to me, things that you only recognize after you've lived a long life. And then the third stanza throws opposites at us. Be blind to force your focus. Be blind to see better, in other words. Sit down to make your stand. Be open to the progress, but don't join the progress. Walk out on the band. Don't be part of it. I haven't come to grips with that yet. But time becomes an action. This type of poet is not, this kind of poem is not written by a young mind. It's written by a mind that's been there, I would assume. I really liked it, too.
That makes sense. And I have to agree with you. There is a real sense of wisdom within this rite. And I like how you mentioned that it's the idea of wisdom being passed on. So excellent comment. And Tom, your thoughts?
I find myself feeling like, there's a sense of time passed, things stolen, and the passing on of the wisdom is, in a sense, recognizing that no matter what life does to you, you have to give your whole life to it, in a sense. It takes a lifetime to come of age. It takes a lifetime to live. It takes a lifetime to love. You have to live each day fully, succeed with every sunrise. But at the same time, the richness of life almost takes your entire life, all of your living, to really appreciate. And then the next two stanzas made me, I had to really stop and think about those because they didn't seem to strike with the same immediacy in the same way as the first in quotes. But it's really, the more I look at it, about how much we have to be present to what's going on, accept the wounds and accept how things shift and slip away from us. And if we're not present for what's going on, it's gone before we knew we had it. You know, I'm reminded of what a friend told me when my son was first born. He said, you know, watch every moment and try to remember them all because they're grown up before you realize. And, and you know, one of the things I always thanked him for because he was right, you know. And that's a lot of what I get in that last verse. And it becomes a very striking piece the more you look at it about life is in the immediate, life is in the experience, and you need to be present to have that happen.
Very true. Very true. That is well said there. And I have to agree, there is a shifting to this almost of the tone between the first two and the last two stanzas. And I really like this all the way through, especially Smoky Spittle Rot Lace Below, Wisdom Badge Off Stained in Yellow. I think that shows that wisdom often comes with wear and tear and age. I also really like Punctured for the Pulse, just praying for the sands, time becomes an action, a thought from vagrant hand. It's interesting how that almost personifies the idea of time. And, you know, I think out of all the stanzas, that probably has the most surreal and abstract imagery, which makes it really intriguing to me. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, before I give you my thoughts, I want to let you know I picked up Naomi. So, hey, Naomi, welcome aboard.
Hello.
Good to have you.
Hi, glad you could join us.
Hello, Naomi.
Hello.
You know, Kim, I got to say this piece, I really like this piece. I thought it was well written. I thought it was a clever piece. And so when you asked about the quote, I went and I pulled them up on, put them in a search, and the only thing that came up was this poem. So I have to assume it's just original lines like Ron suggested. So, yeah. But I thought it was really well done. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Just so, yeah, I figured I would check it out since I had a minute.
Yeah, well, you never know. Sometimes people put quotes in their poems, which works, and sometimes they just put quotation marks because they're indicating that a character is speaking, which was obviously, you know, as was what was going on with this poem. So, very
Absolutely. Cool.
And Naomi, did you have a chance to read or to hear Vagrant Hand?
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I'll catch you on the next round. And let's see here. Let's go ahead and grab the next one. And all right. And up next, we have Ugly Duckling by Eric Svensson, who surprisingly did not supply a SoundCloud. So, Lauren, would you give that a read for us, please?
I'll be happy to. This is Ugly Duckling by Eric Svensson. Deep southern drawl sprawls on porch. Mountebank heat waves, magician cast mirages. Burnished cottonwoods become stage curtains. Bearded moss ushers clip entrance tickets. Crickets screech, violin stings in orchestra. Brown pelican matrons squabble, dabble in demure gossip. Lament bygone youth's sexy saxophone ciphers and Louis Armstrong's horn. Northern mockingbirds chorus lines up in the wings. Gaiety of can-can planned after drill sergeant practice days. Eastern bluebirds pine for genteel gentlemanly and lady days. Northern cardinal, soprano star arrives. Maple red outshines demure dress decorum. Carolina Wren's whisper conspiracy theories. Southern hospitality seems rather sparse and terse. Birds of a feather flock together, like old-time daydreams. Fowl air observe, respond with symphonic overture. love or lambaste, radically ballast, shift all round, even keel, sail, ideal, lulls and dissimulated trade winds. A murder of crow mitigates, while a conspiracy of ravens squat in judgment. Circumstantial evidence dismissed. Fifth Amendment not applicable. Hitchcock secures shutters, latches, and attic windows. Black and white celluloid film bubbles Macbethian toil and broil. Like answers, old times are blown away on the wind. How many rutted, gutted roads must peace still travel on? End poem.
Great read there, Lawrence. I have to say, he always had some of the most unique and clever phrasing. And Naomi, your thoughts on Eric's poem?
Yeah. It's packed full of, he has a lot of reference to different kinds of birds in here. I love the song Lament Bygone, You Sexy Saxophone Cipher, and Louis Armstrong's horn. That stuck out to me. And then the last stanza, the reference to Hitchcock, and then Macbeth, and then the final question, like answers all the time, they're blown away on the wind. How many rutted, gutted roads must peace still travel on? Yeah, it's beautiful. He used the nature throughout the poem, great imagery, great lines in here. Eric always is so philosophical and spiritual in his right. It always amazes me how he fits these lines together. It's amazing. Maybe right here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree with you. He does have a kind of a spiritual and philosophical element to his writing. And the lines about the sexy saxophone ciphers and Louis Armstrong horn really does stand out and grabs the attention. So wonderful observations there. And Tom, your thoughts?
I was looking at the prompt, which is happiness is the ability to recognize it. And he starts off with that opening line, deep southern drawl sprawled on porch, which immediately put a smile on my face. And then he goes through all these metaphors wrapped around birds of all types and birds of all feathers, you know. By the time we get down to where fowl of the air observe respond with symphonic overture, I began to feel it was all for the birds. And again, having me laugh. And as we get to that last final verse, I love that, like answers, old times are blown away on the wind. How many rutted, gutted roads must peace still travel on? And it comes down to life is pretty much built on your ability to recognize it and to see what's going on, just like happiness. And I'm going to stop there because otherwise I have to start going into all the different layers and I don't want to go there. Enough of this.
Oh, yeah, I totally get that. But I like what you have to say about the whole idea of opening your eyes and mind, and I know I'm paraphrasing, to what is around you and to recognize happiness. And I have to say that out of all the quotes offered up in the contest, I think this one was the one most written to, which is always interesting to me to see what people are drawn to. And I think the reason is, I think this is a quote that people just seem to relate to, because a lot of times we have to try to be happy in circumstances that don't necessarily attribute themselves to happiness. And Laurent, you read this wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, I got to tell you that when Tom said this was layered, it certainly is that. Those opening lines, maybe the first, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 lines, seem to paint a picture of the Deep South, right down to brown pelican matrons and Louis Armstrong's horn. All of a sudden, we have northern mockingbirds and a gaiety of can-can planned, and we have eastern bluebirds. So all of a sudden, we have the northern and eastern birds coming in. And at this point, they absolutely have to be metaphors for people. I'm not sure what else. And then we have a northern cardinal soprano star in papal red. And she's really eastern. She's really different, you know. She outshines the demure dress decorum, or the way that the birds normally dress themselves, or people might dress themselves, or actually the way birds come in whatever color of feather. And, of course, now you have the southern wrens, the Carolina wrens, whisper conspiracy theories. And the southern hospitality seems to have gained a little bit of frost, perhaps. That cardinal is just a little too different, a little too eastern. And as such, these birds flock together the way people do, you know, when there's an outsider or something strange or new coming in. And all of this is viewed by the fowl of the air, or perhaps the people of the world or the people of the country or state, whatever, and respond to the symphonic overture. Well, that's just the resonance that comes from the chatter of all the fowl of the air. And right down to the murder of crows and the Fifth Amendment not applicable kind of speaks to even a lynching. But, of course, it doesn't say so. And then a reference to the birds, the movie. It's a marvelous poem. I've tried to tie all the stanzas together. I have difficulty doing so, yet they all seem to be related in one way or another. It is a very layered.
They really do. They really do seem to have a connection. But with a lot of, you know, a lot of his poetry, like you and Tom mentioned, it's so layered and it's not always easy to grab out the connection. I really like how you mentioned, Laurent, about how the birds seem to represent different people, and it does bring to mind that saying birds of a feather flock together. And I think, you know, to me, there's kind of this element of this undertone of prejudiceness, of judging people for their color, for their religion, for their way of life. I don't know, it just kind of has that feel to me, especially with the different birds and the mention of a murder of crows mitigate birds of feather flock together like old-time daydreams, follow the air, observe, respond with symphonic overture. And I like how in that stanza he brings to us that idea of, you know, the birds of the air watching us, and what would they be thinking of the behavior of humanity throughout the decades, throughout the century. Definitely just powerful imagery and metaphors and plenty of food for thought. So very well done. And see what we got next. All right. Up next, we have Be Happy by Robert Polsky. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Hey, be happy. You carry around doubt, guilt, fear, and shame, grasping to your past, the thought in your mind. Life is love and joyous. Play the game it offers. Don't remember days, just remember moments. Live your moments fully. Keep what you adore. Do not forlorn how high you can't score. Do not travel dark. Ride the road with light mind. Be swift to show love and to be kind. Roll out with the punches. Enjoy every grind. And live in harmony with body and mind. Enjoy your own being. Be your own wolf, your wolf pack. Give more than you're getting. Don't expect much back. It's not the upcoming, not about the past. In happiness and sorrow, the present lasts.
Wonderful read there, Naomi. I really like how Albert's poem is filled with beautiful and simple wisdom that really touches the heart. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
Well, I really like this piece because what she's done is it's taken aphorisms, which, you know, we might recognize, but then delivered them in her own language, very creatively, very poetically. All the things that she urges in this piece, one might call common sense, and there would be a little quotation of some kind. You know, it's about the future. It's not about the past. But the way she presents each one makes it her own, and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. This is a nice piece.
Absolutely. But I'm pretty sure Robert is a guy. Just
yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I got to say that I've been fooled before, but you're right.
Yeah. Sorry. I figured I better just say something. But I really like what you're saying.
I was looking at the girl in the field when I said that.
That's such a wonderful picture, too. But, yeah, I like how you said that he put it into a poetic language that was really beautiful. I have to agree. Very well said there. And Tom, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, I was kind of delighted by the strength with which he kept pulling you to hold on to the good times, let the past, you know, let everything else just sort of fall away, and live in the moment, enjoy what you have, be in the present. You know, as he finishes. It's not the upcoming, not about the past. In happiness and sorrow, the present, make it last. Which I thought kind of summed really nicely everything that he'd been saying before that. And because, you know, it's just a very nice piece in a way. It sort of dances along and delights you with insight and wisdom that isn't delivered in a preaching fashion, but more in a way of, have you stopped and looked? Get a load of this kind of thing. I find it quite nice.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Really well said there, Tom. And Naomi, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
This is full of wisdom, of advice, and, you know, don't carry out guilt-free and shame along with you, so that it pulls you down. I enjoyed the line, enjoy your own being, be your own best pack. You know, just be yourself and live in the moment and enjoy who you are and with your own uniqueness and, you know, what makes you and what makes you happy and what the present makes it last. So just beautiful, airy, happy poem and a beautiful rhyme all through also. So bravo, Robert.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Yeah, this did have a really nice rhyme and flow. And you all had wonderful comments. I like Tom and Naomi, how you both mentioned that it really focuses on, you know, enjoying the present, you know, not worrying about the past, not worrying about the future, but live in the here and now. And Naomi, I really liked how you mentioned about how, you know, just learning to, like, love and appreciate yourself. And, you know, I wonderful, like, and again, as Tom said, that it has wisdom without being preachy. I mm-hmm. really like, do not travel dark, ride the roll with light mind, be swift to show love and haste to be kind, roll out with the punches, enjoy every grind, and live in harmony with body and mind. I really like the line, live in harmony with body and mind, and that whole idea of, you know, every part of you is important, every, you know, and you're the one in control of your own happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So, wonderful, right, and very well done. I have to say, there's been so much poetry about happiness. Now I've got the song, Don't Worry, Be Happy, going through my head.
Don't worry, be happy.
And, all right, up next we have If I'd Known by Martha Gettle. And we do have a SoundCloud for that. So, Gene, whenever you're ready, go ahead and push play.
If I'd Have Known by Martha Gettle. If I'd have known what I know now, babe, if I'd have known what I know now, we'd have worked it out somehow. If I'd have known my heart was going to break, and losing you would be more than I could take, that every day would be blue and sad, and I would always be missing what I once had. But I thought I needed to move on. I thought the love I had for you was gone. How could I be so wrong, be such a fool, as to walk away from what I had with you? If I'd have known what I know now, babe, if I'd have known what I know now, we'd have worked it out somehow. I wake each day still missing you, remembering all the things we used to do. And I know that once I had it all, and I brought about my own downfall. If I'd have known what I know now, babe, if I'd have known what I know now, we'd have worked it out somehow. I'd come running back to you, but I know I'm not welcome by you. You moved on, and that is that. I spend my time just looking back.
Absolutely wonderful there, Martha. I have to say, with this song in particular, you can really hear that beat in her singing. So I thought that was very well done, and I definitely appreciate the SoundCloud. And just a reminder to everyone that if you can't call in, the next best thing is to make a recording, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Tom, your thoughts on Martha's song?
Well, if I got the quote right, her prompt was, actions lie louder than words. And she really played on that really, really nicely by using someone admitting to the fact that they screwed up because their actions didn't match what they had to say. I thought, you know, when she got down to that, the chorus is good, but I really like the way she finishes. When I come running back, it's true, but I know I'm not welcome by you. You moved on, and that is that. I just spend my time looking back. It's almost like, you know, saying, you've got everything you wanted more, and I'm kind of been cursed for being the fool, which I thought was a really sharp ending. Great piece.
I have to agree. That was a sharp ending. And there really was a great tone of resentment, not resentment, of regret throughout this whole piece. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
You know, the she's written a poem that is a song everybody sings. The things she sings about are relatable sorrows. And it shows, when she sings it, it seems not so much as to come from her about her, but to come from her about everyone. The other night, she had another poem that she sang, and it was, to me, very country and western. This is not nearly as much country and western, yet it would fit. It's filled with very catchy choruses. It's got very singable lines all the way through here. It's got a perfect rhythm for singing. Boom, da, boom, da, boom. I mean, I really like it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. She often does have that country and western sound. And you're right. She does write about things that we can very easily relate to, such as heartache. So great, great comment there. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, like Tom said, I really like that last chorus, that last stanza. And the chorus, if I'd have known what I know now, we'd have worked it out somehow. So, you know, sometimes in relationships, there's miscommunication. And then after you look at the little things and you say, oh, this happened and this happened and you must have been thinking this and I could have said this or I shouldn't have said this or I should have done this or I shouldn't have done this, you know, and maybe together if we talked more, if we, there was more openness, we would have worked it out. So, yeah, this is very relatable to everyone, I think, that's been in a relationship somewhere along the line, and yeah, anyway, it's relatable to me, and you know, to anyone, I think. So just a great job, Martha.
Absolutely, absolutely wonderful comments, everyone. Yeah, I too like how relatable this is, and I like how it's a story about someone who's looking back at a relationship where things went wrong and where they made mistakes. But the thing is, and I think one of the most important things about this song is that it reminds us that we can, you know, be sorry for our actions. We can apologize, you know, and you know, we can even change ourselves and move forward as a better person. But sometimes you just can't glue something that's broken back together. And I really thought this was great all the way through, but I particularly did like that ending and the chorus. So very well done there. And let's see what we got next. All right. Up next is your poem, Lawrence, so go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
All right, I did prompt number one as well. And this is called Common Man. My fist clenches and unclenches, knuckling pale in pockets where fingers placed for warmth, curry lint balls, small corpses of hours, bleached felt of ennui, rounding detritus of the day, disposition with a flick. Begone, worries, born of nameless sources. No swinging pendulum threatens my existence. Where then is happiness? bluebirds swooping in song, absence? Is there no common denominator, clamoring for attention, allowing recognition, permission to laugh? Such a paucity of divisors gleamed clean. At 12, it was skipping stones and BB guns. Take a shot for the win. Simple, then. An on-again, off-again game for children. Transition. Lark's tongues in aspic. Brave dissonance of years. Pulling triggers on big guns. Gray. Belching steel. Vomiting orange flame. Explosion of sound. Body buffeted by shockwaves. Delivering death to unseen enemies. They reward us with medals for participation. Stand proud, soldier, and salute. Even as spit and invective fly in your face, gifts of peers and comfortable clothes. I have done nothing evil. Yet guilt hangs heavily for all the shortcuts and easy rolls of the dice taken, marginally enough to bolster failure. To the level of modest survival. I have done nothing worthy to improve life, excepting the occasional orgasmic success, proving barely average over the span of years got behind me. Common man, wanted, missing, and possibly armed for discontinuity of happiness and fleeing the scene of the crime. End poem.
Wow, I have to say, damn, Lawrence, that is really good. I really, really like how the quotes, the prompt, comes across as deceptively simple, and yet there is a layers of thought to linger on when you look at the idea of what is happiness and how is it created. And I really feel like your phrasing here captures that idea. But before I comment more, I'm going to ask, of course, others for their comments. So let's start with you, Tom. Your thoughts.
This is one that I almost would rather sit and write it so I can take it apart piece by piece because it opens really beautifully with the questions about how do we find anything in our lives beyond boredom and worry. And then slowly but surely speaks to where then is happiness, bluebirds swooping in song. Because for all of our love of joy and laughter, there's such a paucity of divisors, clean, clean. At 12, it was skipping stones and BB guns, taking a shot for the win, simple then. And he takes that 12-year-old image and begins to turn it into all the adult ways in which we find ways to destroy everything that is valuable and wonderful around us, even as we say we are trying so hard to save it. And it makes it really poignant when you come to the I have done nothing. Nice and jamming. Evil. Yet guilt hangs heavily for all the shortcuts. And he goes on taking us down until we reach that last verse and suddenly reminds us that in all of this, we are searching for happiness in a way. Common man, wanted, missing, and possibly armed for discontinuity of happiness and fleeing the scene of the crime. It's almost like you got a choice. You either get a way to be happy or you end up with PTSD, the anxiety of your own inadequacy that destroys you. And so there's really a tension in this poem that highlights how much it is happiness is the ability to recognize it, because it's not about happy. It's really about where is the ability to recognize. Very sharp and thoughtful piece.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Absolutely. Great observations there, Tom. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really, really like this piece. I like how you took the metaphor of the gun, like when you're small, when you're only 12, and you're playing with a BB gun, and then all of a sudden that gun becomes a big gun, a real gun, you know, with the explosions and the bullets and the shockwaves delivering death to unseen enemies. And then I think there's guilt in this too, you know, guilt maybe of being a survivor when you were in the war, probably, maybe, I don't know, but seeing, you know, that the way that the others survived and the other, the way the other others died and survived. I don't know here. But anyway, it's all linked in all the way through to that research of happiness and how it's fleeting and how it's in and out and how you can't sometimes grasp it. And you're just like a common man wanting it, but this had a certain feeling of hauntingness throughout it, I found, and very written, and as always, but this piece really really sticks in my mind. This is one of the pieces lately that I think I enjoyed the most from you, Laurent.
Thank you so much, Naomi.
Wonderful comment, Naomi. And, you know, I have to agree with you. I was thinking in my head that haunting was a great word to describe this poem. And what I like is it has a feel of somebody looking back over their life and what they've done and asking themselves, well, you know, when was there happiness and when wasn't there? And, you know, what did I do to deserve any happiness? I really like the phrase small corpses of ours. And I also like where you say, where then is happiness, bluebird swooping in song absent? Is there no common denominator clamoring for attention? And I like how you have this character, this person, thinking about happiness in almost a way as if he was a scientist and trying to find the common denominator and why and where the happiness comes in. I also really liked the phrase of lark's tongues and aspics. That just stands out, first of all, because I really hate the way aspic looks. It just is horrible looking stuff. But I like the idea.
I gave credit for that line where it belongs in my AN to King Crimson.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, you know, it is always really cool. I see that King Crimson and E.A. Cole for inspiration. That is, you know, really cool to get inspiration from fellow poets. So kudos. And also, let's see, I have done nothing worthy to improve life except in the occasional orgasmic success proving barely average. And I like to use orgasmic success because it's that whole idea of success, you know, and happiness being fleeting, like grand but fleeting. And I have to say this was just really an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pat.
And, all right, going to get the next one up, which will be your poem, Tom. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Results are often caused by the silliest things. How often in the wake of news when one wonders how to rise, to stand, act with a sense of command, lead when all desires say, stay in bed. Can a body find strength, the mind acquire insight, the eyes suddenly sight a new path, at last a way towards success, after all has been a haunt of failure? We stir the pot, wait to see what rises to the surface. Coincidence, opportunity. Insight and vision are often no more than seizing the moment, resting success, because less is death. Sometimes more than confidence, the ache of anxiety, the jab of fear, motivate and produce great results. Ignorance, more often than not, allows one to overcome obstacles because we were too blind to know they were there. Accidents combined with the thrust need creates lets the dice roll be in our favor. History tells it all as if it was done with purpose. Just as dictators rise to opportunity, so can our best intentions when we are convinced we can. Reason is invented. The action is everything. The only truth, those that stand still go nowhere.
Great read there, Tom. I have to say, I like the fact that you were inspired by two different prompts, and your poetry, and this is no exception, often offers up some food for thought to chew on, and I always appreciate that. And Lauren, your thoughts.
My thoughts are coalescing, but I will take a gander at it. There's a great truth in this poem. And I saw it in these lines. Ignorance, more often than not, allows one to overcome obstacles because we were too blind to know they were there. Accidents combined with the thrust need creates lets the dice roll be in our favor. History tells it all as if it was done with purpose. An immediate action will always, usually, bring about an immediate response, which brings about a reaction and back and forth. And that is absolutely the way many things have happened. Events overtake us before we're quite ready for them. So we don't think about it, we just do. And sometimes it's far better to be unaware of the dangers, not know they were there, move on through to the other side, as it were. And that is what I see in the lines and in the poem itself. Although I will tell you, the temptation to stay in bed is a mighty one, yielded to perhaps too frequently in the past for many. But yes, action is what's necessary. The only truth, those that stand still go nowhere. Yes, they do, like statues, shit upon by pigeons. Excellent poem.
Oh, absolutely. Well said there, Lawrence. And Naomi, your thoughts. I didn't ask you your thoughts. Okay.
I really like this, Tom, all the way through. It's true. Sometimes we just take everything, and like you have in the line, we steer the pot and wait to see what rises to the surface. Coincidence, opportunity, insight, and vision are often no more than seizing the moment, wrestling success because less is death. Yeah, and it's so true. Like, you know, so many things that that happen in life are just, you know, because of an opportunity that shows up, a coincidence, you know, the life is just, you know, the outcome is just what rises to the surface. And you say this so well, like when you mention dictators that rise, you know, to opportunity, it's true that many dictators, because of the, like, if you take Hitler, for example, you know, the country was in ruins. The people were waiting for this miracle to happen. They were stuck in a country that was broken by the First World War, and in poverty and everything. And he rose because of that opportunity that was there. You know, that's how he rose. Not to do good things, but anyway, he succeeded in rising anyway. And this poem all through has deepness to it, and just truths here, and just very well written. So amazing, amazing poem, Tom. Amazing write.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comments. I really like how this rite reminds us that how often time it's so difficult to get out of bed and to face the world, especially when we're bombarded constantly on television with negativity. I really like the two lines separate where it says, we stir the pot, wait to see what rises to the surface. And coincidence, opportunity, insight, and vision are often no more than seizing the moment, resting success because less is death. And I really liked there how you remind us how oftentimes we are kind of our way of looking at life is out of joint. We need to learn to just, you know, calm down and pull back a bit. I also did really, I mean, this is great all the way through, but also just as dictators rise to opportunity, so can our better intention when we are convinced we can leave as a defendant, the actions, everything. And, you know, what I find very intriguing and what I like about that is you think of dictators as negative, which they are. You know, obviously, you know, people who are dictators want things their own way. Oftentimes they have ideologies that hurt other people. But within this, you remind us that, you know, those people who were dictators, Hitler, Stalin, were all people who rose up and took advantage of opportunities. And oftentimes, obviously, we need to do it in a far less evil way, but we do need to rise up and take advantage of opportunities, you know, when offered. I think this is a wonderful, thoughtful write all the way through and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam.
All right, and up next we have your poem, Naomi, so go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay, so this is called I Once Thought That Happiness Was Watching a Sunrise. I stared into a sunrise, waiting for its golden rays to meet my eyes of ashes, summoning a radiant, dazzling smile. That's how I thought happiness happened for a while. But all I could muster was a lukewarm shoulder shrug, a tired yawn and sigh. Well, I guess that's all, and felt my hopes fall. Thought that happiness was a habit, that if I wore it long enough, it would stick to me like a jacket. covered in positive patches made of harps and unicorns, but the jacket never seemed to keep me warm enough. Accepting finally that happiness simply starts when it is you who picks up your own shattered pieces. It is you who drags yourself off the cold bathroom floor. It is you who decides to get up one morning, realizing that sometimes it is the strongest thing a person can do in their lifetime.
Bravo, Naomi. That is absolutely a beautiful read and write. And I really appreciate that. And Tom, let's start with your thoughts.
This is really sharp and incisive, because the idea of, one, if you look at a sunrise for too long, it will make you go blind. But anyway, the idea that somehow happiness is something that happens to you, or happiness is something that is given to you. That joy is manufactured is a common malady, you might say. And I like how you take the idea that, you know, you're going to sort of create this magic spell by looking at a sunrise, and suddenly you're going to feel wonderful. And the response of a lukewarm shoulder shrug, a tired yawn and sigh, well, I guess that's all, and I felt my hopes fall, was a great way to just sort of steward that thinking. And then when you get into the next one about it being a happiness, being a habit, or, you know, wearing the right stuff, it somehow it's something that you create by making sure that you have all the right stuff for the right way. You know, I'm reminded of those people who keep talking about how, well, if I just do this, then I'll be happy. I thought using that metaphor of the jacket, but the jacket never seemed to keep me warm enough. It's just great. Stylistically, the way you decorated the jacket was just very, very, very you really brought across the way we fool ourselves without sounding really bitter and cynical, just sort of a little bit more worldly by the time you got to the end of it and woke up that this wasn't going to work. And that makes it all that much stronger, because it's really easy to put ourselves down or be really bitter about the ways that we haven't succeeded in being happy. And you just seem to accrue wisdom in the process of confronting these disappointments. And to do that in your writing is really very, very strong, and makes it that much easier to accept what's happening. And then when you get to that last verse and you do such a great job of catching certain motifs which have been written about 1,000 times, like, you know, it is you who drags yourself off the cold bathroom floor. But we already are willing to accept being talked to this way because of the previous two verses. And we find ourselves, at least I find myself, cheering it on. And through those last two lines of it, it is the strongest thing a person can do in their lifetime. It's just a striking way to finish. Beautiful piece. Very, 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 very well done.
Thank you, Tom.
Absolutely. Great comment, Tom. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, Naomi, what a nice piece this is. Accepting finally that happiness simply starts when it is you who picks up your own shattered pieces. I guess beauty is not happiness, despite the overwhelming embrace of nature. Certain times, happiness is that small step we take, followed by a second and a third, especially when the steps are difficult, leading towards a goal of small bursts of accomplishment in the life we live. It's how we normally achieve our measure of happiness. It's really that grand moment, but it's the small, sweet moments. I think that do it. Ms. Palmer says it so well. Great work, Naomi.
Thank you, Lovin.
Absolutely. Wonderful comments. I have to say, first of all, there's something about the flow of this poem, like the way you, each line has almost a certain meter to it, that even though it's not a rhyming poem, it still has a really nice flow in the read. And I like that, but very cool there. I like the second stanza where it talks about the patches, positive patches made of hearts and unicorns. And I think that makes for a great metaphor there, and the whole idea of we try to cover problems up with those fake smiles and those patches of, you know, like we just keep ourselves busy in hopes that nobody, including ourselves, will notice how truly sad we are. And I like that you mentioned that sometimes it's in the last part, it's the small steps, pulling yourself up off the bathroom floor, even just getting out of bed, whatever is your small step, your big accomplishment towards your happiness is what's important. So excellent right there, Naomi, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And all right, up next I'm going to put my right, and Laurent, if you would leave comments on this poem, I'd appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. And this is inspired, obviously, by the quote about libraries, which is, as beauty is in the eye of the beholder, the proper library is in the wish of its maker. And this is called Dream Library. And it goes like this. A lovely room so big and grand with information right on hand. A library born of dreams, fairy dust and mauve moonbeams. Rows and rows of lined up books tempt the eyes to take a look. Winged horses swoop and soar in magic lands of ancient lore. A table carved from wood so fine, intricate in curves and lines. A big red chair with puffy cushion that for hours I'll sit my cushion. An iron gargoyle chandelier, candlelight for atmosphere. Surreal art hung on the walls, two porcelain lamps made of purple cows. Maps, mishaps, and mysteries, coffee, chocolate, cups of tea. Books for fun, books to learn, never any books to burn. A window seat and reading nook, a lovely view of trees and brook. Poetry that's writ with flair, books for me and books to share. Rows and rows of thumb-through pages, stories from the minds of mages. Characters of dark and light, good and evil, rise and fight. Epic hunts for pirate treasure, perhaps romance for good measure. Knowledge that my soul must know, I'll read beneath a cowlit glow. End poem.
Verbally would be easy here. A poem that is as delightful and inventive and creative and well-rhymed as possible, I think. This could be a Feijiana's favorite poem. I think she should read this to her kids, librarian that she is. I love the self-deprecating humor, the self-deprecating cow humor, excuse me, because it's an inside joke that will tickle the mind enough to find out what does she mean by that, thereby enhancing your general cowliness, if I may say. I know you had to read your own poem, but this is a poem that anybody who likes to read aloud would love to read. The rhyming, a lovely room so big and grand, with information right on hand, a library born of dreams, fairy dust, and mauve moonbeams. You have the alliteration and the rhyming word together. Perfect. The rhyme in the third stanza, a big red chair with puffy cushion, that for hours I'll sit my tush in. It just flows so seamless, so it's delectable, it really is. Now, however, you're going to have to find an icon of two porcelain lamps, a purple cow, and use those as your icon. It would be fitting. This is marvelous.
Oh, absolutely. I will definitely have to look that up.
Just love it. Oh, Tomas, your turn.
Well, besides the bovine alliteration, I will see if I can do some kind of critical appraisal and make a comment here. First of all, it is delightfully lyrical in the way the meter and the rhyme works. And it tickles you in pink when you hear a big red chair with puffy cushion that for hours I'll sit my cushion. And you're like, oh, I wish I could have come up with that. The brazenness with which surreal art hung on the wall doesn't at all rhyme with two porcelain lamps, a purple cow. But the in-joke for everyone who knows and loves you immediately accepts and doesn't worry about at all.
Absolutely.
This is just an opportunity to delight in your imagination about a wonderful space where every book you've ever dreamed of owning, every story that you've ever wanted told, is suddenly available on a shelf somewhere and just waiting for your joy and soul to open up its pages and read everything it has to offer. And who, if they are of any kind of a bibliotech or someone in love with the written word, wouldn't delight and dream of having the same thing? So by being wild and expansive and full of fun, it makes it possible for everyone to see themselves if they have the least love for writing in this piece. Very, very well done.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. Very nice. And Naomi, please.
Yeah, I love how you took the quote, as beauty is in the eye of the beholder. The proper library is in the wish of its maker. So throughout this poem, we see that you created your dream library with all the books that you would have loved to see there, the furniture, the lamps, and then of purple cows, the porcelain lamps, and then the other one? Cow one. the skin, the skin of the cow. Where was it? Purple cow.
Maybe it was the last line with the cowlit glow.
Yeah, the cowlit glow. So you created all through this, you know, your own vision of what of the beauty that is in the eye of the beholder there, in your eye, and that is what would be your dream place, your dream library here. And I just thought it was a fun, airy, amazing write, an amazing rhyme, but also has that, you know, it's well tied into that quote. Amazing, right, Pam?
Thank you so much. You know, and I have to agree with Lauren that I think Afasiana would really like this poem.
She would.
And thank you, everyone. All right, up next we have Damaged Light by Errant Panther. And Lauren, would you give that a read for us, please?
Happy to. This is called Damaged Light, Errant Panther. Damaged light is all that remains inside a heart once laden with dreams. There's a certain insanity in continually beating against walls that will never crumble, despite how eagerly we pursue the wall behind it. There are times the fight is futile, even if we recognize it beneath our stubborn ambitions. We can turn sod after sod, toiling amid soils never destined to bear fruit. Such is the maddening grind of trying to illuminate our existence as being anything outside of mediocrity and convincing ourselves that one day there'll be no more dead-end roads. End poem.
Great read, Lawrence, and a wonderful write by Errant Panther. I'm always glad when he is inspired by one of our contests. And Naomi, your thoughts?
I love how he finishes this out, convincing ourselves that one day there will be no more dead-end roads. I love that, how he took dead-end roads there. And, yeah, that we can persevere and persist and go on and grind and everything and just try to illuminate our existence, by being anything outside of mediocrity and ending up convincing ourselves that one day there will be no more dead-end roads. And it's right to the brink of, there's a certain insanity of that, beating up against the walls until they almost, that walls that will never crumble. And, just a whole thing of, learning when to quit, when to stop. It's very thoughtful, right, all through, and wonderfully written. So bravo, Errant Panther.
Absolutely. Well said there, Naomi. Great comment. Yeah, I like that he chose prompt four, which was one of the first principles of perseverance, is to know when to stop persevering. I thought that quote there was a fine example of Carolyn Wells' sense of humor. Tom, your thoughts?
This, his piece plus her quote has me really thinking about, at first you don't succeed, try again, but then insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. He brings up there's a certain insanity in continually beating against walls that will never crumble. And that reminded me of the Serenity poem, and the wisdom to know the difference. That your times with the fight is futile, even if we recognize it beneath our stubborn ambitions. I like there how he speaks to the ego, which says, if you just keep at it, you can overcome the obstacles. And one of the obstacles is one of you just being ridiculous. And then the last one. For you, it took me a long time to learn that I didn't have a black thumb. I was just ignorant to how to grow things properly. Because we can turn side after side, toiling amid soils never destined to bear fruit. And such is a maddening grind of trying to illuminate our existence as being anything outside of mediocrity. Again, he just keeps bringing the... How much is it really understanding what needs to be done? Edison, every time that I make it, I find it, my idea doesn't work, it just gives me one more understanding of what I need to do right. And when is it just our ego refusing to acknowledge that we have come across something that we cannot solve?
Absolutely.
And I just thought the ending is sharp because he really leaves you in the question. He doesn't really answer anything for you. And instead, he really makes you think a lot longer and harder at how do you know? And when is it going to be a recognition that where you are is something that doesn't work.
I like that. Very well said there. Great comment. And Lauren, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I was going to quote the same stanza that Tom did, the sought after sod. If we do not persevere, we can never succeed. We might as well plan for failure. And it can be maddening. And you see that so clearly in this poem, but too much of a good thing destroys us. Know when to stop, if you should stop at all. I was watching a video the other day of Elon Musk, one of the great men of the 21st and possibly the 20th centuries. And somebody asked him about some of the failures in his SpaceX rocket program. And he quoted somebody who I should know, but I've forgotten. And he said that there are 1,000 ways to fail, only one way to succeed. And that's true. There is only one way to succeed, but his case was day-to-day of life that we live. It's us not to beat our heads.
Absolutely. And that quote does sound really familiar. And, yeah, it feels like we should know who was the original person that said it, but, you know, sometimes names just slip out of the mind. I really liked also as the last stanza that you and Tom both pointed out, but I also really like there's a certain insanity in continually beating its walls that will never crumble despite how eagerly we pursue life. Lauren actually dropped. Okay, that's why he ended his comment at such an odd. I'm going to bring him back on. So, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. All of a sudden the phone went dead, and I went, what the F? Great piece.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I too really liked this, and I liked that last stanza. But, you know, I also, like I said, I liked the second stanza where it reminds us of the insanity of beating against the wall. So just really an excellent write and very well done. And let's see what we got next. And all right. Up next we have A Bridge by Lafayette. And, Tom, would you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. A Bridge by Lafayette. Frozen wind was a warm road selected for the journey. Oftentimes, written as though the author knew the act, I will challenge them many, walking the steps. The undulated concrete, if not tramped, the sentiment never inhaled. In opposition, I survived, moved with the squall, a new realness, bestial times, fighting shadows within. Eyed the water's placidity, yet tenseness, a path to solace. Breathe, grapple with the stings, or walk to the waveless waters. Frozen wind on the concrete's arch. Damp ground, mist drops on face. Absurdity to your face and time, near comical thoughts. You smile. The cars cascade past, countless, you cry. Your steps took you to the peak, edge to the rail, water, air, so white. In opposition, I survived, endured fragmented moments of a life normal. Joy absent, but now so easily defined, breathe its existence, lost years, yet victorious days, nay, weeks. winds ripped me to shreds, tumbling rolled me together. Frozen wind on that bridge, a January night. Choice, the muzzled end, leap to the accelerated air en route to the water. As hands grasp the biting cold steel, in truth, he does not land. An odd bird comes alongside your hand. His eyes look to your soul. At 1 a.m, the light is as if noon. He takes flight with a horribly tumultuous call, and his wings ruffle the dead air. I let go the rail and walk down the concrete arch away from the dead calm. End poem.
Great read there, Tom. And I have to say, I don't know about anybody else, but Lafayette is new to me, to my contests and shows that I host. So I always appreciate and enjoy seeing someone new. I know he had said that he might try to call in, but I also know that when you're new, sometimes you like to listen first and then decide, you know, if perhaps call in on another show. And I hope he does consider, like, if he writes for any more late night poet shows, calling in, because new voices are always encouraged and welcomed. And I really appreciate him writing for this contest and show. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. This is a new voice to me and a welcome one. The diversity that new poets bring can be quite refreshing. Not as refreshing, perhaps, as the frozen wind was in this poem. A warm road selected for the journey, oftentimes written as though the author knew the act, as if he knew what was going to happen. You know, he takes us to the edge of the bridges, of the concrete's arch, the damp ground, the mist on the face, which is in all an absurdity to him. Cars cascade past, countless. And it's at this moment I thought of a possible suicide. Your steps took you to the peak, edge to the rail, water, air, so quiet. And then the lines, in opposition, I survived. Endured fragmented moments of a life normal. Joy absent, but now so easily defined. Breathe its existence. And he does. The existence that was so tumultuous now becomes something different. And I love the inclusion of the odd bird that comes alongside, eyes looking to your soul, and then takes off with that horribly tumultuous call, and wings ruffling the dead air, almost bringing the character away from the rail, walking down the concrete arch, away from that dead calm that he saw a little bit earlier in the poem, almost like walking away from death and finding out that it is better to engage, regardless of how hard, than it is to just stop and die. Great piece.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to agree. I mean, it's a strong piece, and that near the end where it seemed like the character was going to jump off the bridge, it had me really on the edge of my seat, just, you know, thinking, you know, about the idea of what's going to happen next. And great comments there. And Tom, your thoughts?
Myself, oh. As I was reading it.
Can't hear you, Tom.
You sound like you're in a tunnel.
Okay, I found myself, as I was reading this, feeling that Let me reiterate the beginning. Oftentimes written as though the author knew the act, I will challenge them many, walking the steps, the undulated concrete, if not tramped, the sentiment never inhaled. I'm reminded of veterans who talk about how you can't explain things that go on during wartime unless you've been there. You can't appreciate it. You can't sense it. And so too is someone who really confronts the possibility of committing suicide. I mean, because when you deal with people doing suicide, you want to find out, have they thought about it? Have they made a plan for it? Have they started final in the dangerous one? Because now I thought they're going to kill themselves. And he does a beautiful job of describing getting right up to that point. And it's not so much about life and death as confronting who you are.
I like that.
And he does,
he
does that really well. And then I like how he comes out of the poem and does those three lines at the end, because those are much more satisfying about once it's all over and not so much reflecting back as it is almost more like a waking up. He takes flight with a horribly tumultuous call and his wings ruffle the dead air. I let go of the rail and walk down the concrete arch away from the dead calm. That's just a perfect ending. Stunning piece.
It truly is. I have to agree. And Naomi, your thoughts?
I like how he used frozen wind. You know, it's not blowing. It's not a wind that you commonly, he uses the term frozen. So the wind is frozen, and it's like that dead calm in the quote that he used. And he is somewhat like the living gale here, and the metaphor that he uses of the bird in the poem, and the bird looks into his soul. And then the bird takes off. So the bird is like, I thought, read into the poem, that bird was like a metaphor for himself, hanging on to life and becoming that ties into the quote, becoming a living gale, and that is better than just a dead calm. This is an amazing right here. So well written and so deep, and an awesome awesome write all through. So I'm really happy to discover this poet, and I checked out his page and he was a soldier. So Tom was right in his comment because he mentioned it on his page. So
very cool. Well, you all had wonderful comments, but yeah, that was definitely a good call there, Tom, and. And I like, Naomi, how you pointed out the phrase, the frozen wind, because you don't often think of wind as being frozen, but that gives the idea of how truly cold it was. And I really liked how he called it an odd bird comes alongside your hand, because I like how the word odd relates to the idea of someone or something that's unique, something that stands out. There's, within those lines, and in fact, and in this writing in general, there's kind of a very spiritual feel to it. And I like how it's about that struggle through life, that struggle through depression, and, you know, that learning that sometimes, you know, it's just taking those steps, you know, away from that dead calm. You know, and I really like how he says, in opposition, I survived, endured fragmented moments of a life normal, joy absent, but now so easily defined, yet breathed its existence, lost years, its victorious days, nay, weeks. And I like how in that, those lines he reminds us that sometimes victories aren't something that happened for years on end. But, you know, sometimes, you know, there's good days, there's good weeks, and we have to, you know, appreciate those moments. This is just a beautiful and emotive write, and just very well done. And I don't want to try to rush a last poem. We have a couple of carryovers, which we will find space for. Instead, I'm going to mention upcoming shows and contests that need rights and wrap things up. First of all, 30 minutes after this show is Late Night with the Midnight Bomber. Make sure to check that out. She always has some wonderful rights and great quotes for people to be inspired by. Tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, is The Art of Seduction. And Fill My Eyes is running that contest with absolutely some beautiful artwork, which has black and white pictures or sepia pictures with a splash of color. So just make sure to check it out and be inspired. Of course, check out the topic boards and contests put out by all our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're always sure to find something to inspire you. And another contest I want to mention, which is very important to me, is that Richard Wiseman and Laurent are both running a contest for Veterans Day, which is on the Thursday 10 p.m. show. So you know, make sure to check out the contest or the topic board. And remember that whether you were a veteran, or you know and care about somebody who's a veteran, or you just respect and appreciate the service that veterans have provided for their country, you know, check out the contest, check out the topic board, put in a write, and call into the show, because your voice is always appreciated, and it's very important that we show respect to our veterans. And of course, The Art of Seduction. We also like to have fun with a bit of sensuality. I'd like to say thank you to Jean for everything she does in the background. She is truly appreciated. Thank you to Tom, Lauren, and Naomi for calling in, for the Aaron Panther and others who hung on the board, to everybody who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. This has been a wonderful show filled with poetry that just really touched my heart and made me think. And I really appreciate that. And Jean, was there anything you wanted to say? Was there anything you wanted to say off mute?
Yes. great choice of prompts again, Pam, as always. And thank you again, Tom, Naomi, and Laurent, for spending time with us tonight. We all appreciate it. And great show, Pam. Great show.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, guys.
Thank you, guys. Great night. Bye. Mm-hmm.